Willkommen beim Wonderful Podcast, Living Yoga off the Mat. Ich bin Wanda Badwal. Ich freue mich, gemeinsam mit dir die faszinierende Welt des Yoga, der Spiritualität und persönlichen Weiterentwicklung zu erforschen, zu hören und zu erfahren, wie wir mehr Liebe, Balance und Erfüllung in unserem täglichen Leben integrieren können. Willkommen bei Wonderful. Schön, dass du hier bist. Hi, and welcome to the Wonderful Podcast. I'm so glad that you're here. In this week's episode, I'm very happy speaking with Dr. Scott Lyons. Scott is a clinical psychologist with an emphasis on somatics in mind-body medicine. He is an osteopath and the co-creator of Embodied Flow. Dr. Scott Lyons is dedicated to teaching embodiment as a way of exploring human development, healing, growth, and transformation. His deep passion is to integrate somatic practices, transpersonal inquiry, and scholarly research into the creative and healing arts. I had the honor to train with Scott and his business partner, Tara Jodell, in the style of Embodied Flow. In the end of our last training together, I took the opportunity to have a conversation with Scott. We talked about emotions and the importance of feeling all of our feelings in order to heal and integrate. We also spoke about the symptoms of our modern day society, such as anxiety, depression, loneliness, and the feeling of separation, and how relationships and our need of being heard and seen are essential for our human experience. I really loved this conversation with Scott, and I felt deeply moved during this interview. And I hope you can take a lot from this podcast as I did. And now, enjoy listening. Welcome to the podcast, Scott. I'm so happy that you're here.
Thank you for having me.
Especially at 7:30 a.m. in the morning. After teaching, like how many hours did you teach now?
Training? Couple hundred.
Yeah. Couple of hundred in a row.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for taking the time, making this possible.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking.
So my first question to you is, what moves you right now in your life or in this moment?
It's a lovely question. I was just thinking about that when someone asked me recently, just last night, a good friend of mine. And I actually think that's a great question to keep checking in with on friends or with friends. Like, you know, at this point in your life, we've known each other. I mean, this particular friend, almost 25 years. And so every few years we check in and we're like, what's moving you right now? And I think one of the things that's moving me right now is really the process of leading people towards more sense of freedom, and in particular that freedom being the ways in which they're bound, they're feeling tense, they're feeling tight from just this really fundamental sense of ease. And that journey also means that they're landing, they're arriving back into themselves, that there's these ways in which the sort of the dust on the mirror to see themselves, to experience themselves, is being wiped away. And there's just this beautiful recognition of who they are without any of these constructs that are really getting in their way. You know, the example I was giving my friend was a patient I was recently working with who, you know, after who came to me and said, oh, I'm not feeling like anyone loves me, that I'm not good enough, that I'll never find love. And we were unpacking it in a way that it was really inspiring. This individual realized that this idea that no one could love them stemmed from a way in which they were creating distance from people themselves, which I think we've all done on some level.
For sure.
Yeah. And, you know, and when we looked at, you know, what are the means, what are the ways in which that he was creating that distance, that space from people. And you know, was recognizing, oh, it's, I use my job, I use my friends, I use my other, you know, my interests as a way to create distance. And also recognize that there were certain scripts, like internal cognitive scripts, like I'm not attractive enough, I'm not funny enough, I'm not smart enough. And those were on repeat and actually helped him keep space from people. Mm. You know, it's interesting that we could say those could also be wounds, but in many ways, those scripts are, they ensure the space. They ensure that there won't be closeness, that proximity that could stimulate that vulnerability and then stimulate some perhaps older experiences or feelings that haven't been metabolized or experienced that show up in that open vulnerability, which was the case for this individual, that he really recognized that out of a, you know, out of a past breakup, that he created these scripts as a way to not feel the pain of the separation.
Mm.
And I mean, at that point, it wasn't tolerable. So there's a real understanding of going, wow, that particular breakup was so significant. And it, you know, just there wasn't the resources, the support to be with that feeling. And in turn, created these scripts of these, you know, trying to justify the breakup. Because, you know, in a breakup, it can feel like free-falling. And we'll grasp at anything to try to slow that free-falling down, which could include demeaning ourselves, saying, oh, it's because I'm not good enough or they're not good enough. They suck at communication. I suck at communication. Mm-hmm. I'm not attractive enough. I'll never find love again. All of those things are sort of scripts that play out that are trying to help us to stop or slow down that free-falling. But at the same time, they take us away from the experience of the experience. And they become the dust on the mirror, the compensation of not being with our experience. And those compensations begin to become our identities, which can be quite challenging to come back to. Who are we without those scripts? And so this individual really, in this courageous way, was willing through these sessions to start to take that dust off the mirror, to really let go of those constructs, so that sense of who he was, to come back to more of a fundamental nature, where in that fundamental nature of who he was just really, truly an empowered individual who felt whole and complete and free. And I think for me, I recognize the value socially, culturally, environmentally of that freedom. You know, I think that in that place where we feel free and connected, it's nearly impossible to harm. To harm ourselves, to harm the environment, to harm each other. And so, you know, to me, that's what's moving me right now is the, we could say harm reduction, but it's really about freedom enhancement.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow, there was so much in that you said. What I would love to go more into is the aspect of really being here with what's here. So really feeling our feelings.
Yeah.
That's also something I hear quite often is that people say to me, I want to learn again how to feel. Mm. I feel separated from my feelings. I feel numb.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably the hardest practice of all. especially for breakup. I know that. To really be with that pain.
Yeah.
So can you guide us right now, maybe into a practice to just check in what's here now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll just preface that with if any of the listeners are driving, mm-hmm. not to close their eyes.
yes, but don't do that.
Or pull over and close your eyes. Yeah, we can certainly do a practice. So we can close your eyes if it feels right. And begin to let your attention move to where you're being supported by the ground, perhaps by a chair. Letting your breath even migrate to that point of contact of support. And noticing where you can say yes to that support receiving you. And where you can say yes to receiving that support. We might add to that the space around you like a blanket, also coming in to support where you are, how you are. And from that support of the earth and support of the space as a blanket around you, letting your attention move inward into the core of your body, your head and neck. Chest, abdomen and pelvis, and the limbs of your body weave into that. Like a pebble in a pond into your body. What in me wants to be recognized or acknowledged right now? Knowing the response might come in the form of sensation, words, feelings, or even imagery. And as you open up that channel of communication with the whole of your body, answering the question of right now, what I'm feeling is. And right now, what I'm feeling is. And right now, what I'm feeling is. And I'll invite you to share those words, those feelings out loud. In a way that allows you to hear them back. Noticing what of those feelings, those words, feel like a right fit into your experience, like a lock into a key, or a key into a lock. And as that key fits into the lock, as that experience, that feeling is recognized, noticing how the rest of your body responds. Noticing what happens in your breath. Perhaps even noticing what happens to that sense of your body into the support of the earth, into the space, and even into yourself. And then start to expand your awareness back into the room, the sounds, the smells, the texture, the temperature of the air. And whatever you landed in within yourself, let that move with you as you extend your awareness into the surroundings.
Yeah. Thank you so much for this very sweet practice.
My pleasure. Thank you for asking for it.
So guys, I think this is probably one of the most amazing and important practices for your life, honestly. Just having the courage to be with our feelings and acknowledging them. So can you speak more of what does it do when we acknowledge what's here?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I want to also recognize that sometimes it's not always easy to be here with what's here.
Not at all.
No. You know, what's been modeled from our family, what's been allowed, what's been invited to, you know, what's been validated. All of those things play into the engagement of how to be here with what's here, and even the access towards being here with what's here can sometimes be foggy for us, as you mentioned earlier. And, you know, being here with what's here allows us to navigate the world. I mean, it's as direct and simple as that. It's like, if you don't have a map, if you don't have a compass, you get lost in the woods. Mm-hmm. And our feelings, our sensations are that map. It is that compass. It is the direct feedback of what's happening so that we can engage and navigate with what's happening. And, you know, there's so many, we can look at it as the health benefits of being here with what's here and allowing that to move through us is that we actually, it is one of the pillars of well-being to, you know, if you imagine like the ocean, which we're very close to, and you take some liquid nitrogen and freeze one of the waves, mm-hmm. you can see that something feels stagnant and challenged in the environment. And that is what's happening on a physiological level. There are consequences to freezing the ocean. The rest of the ocean is still trying to move. Mm-hmm. And it's getting challenged by the fact that something is stagnant. And where there's stagnation festers disease. And so if you imagine that frozen wave of the ocean getting to melt back in, there's something that emerges even implicitly of like, oh, there's something right about that, that coming back to that flow and that direction, that movement. And that is when we are with what's happening within us, is that continuation of the waves in the ocean. And, you know, I think one of our fears is that it's going to freeze. It's going to become who we are. It's going to last for the rest of our life, which is absolutely not the case. When we truly dip in and allow what's here to move, emotion, the word has motion in the word. It's inherent. It's that it is meant to move. And when we're with it, it will move. It might mean that we need some additional support and resources, friends, dogs, cats, whatever it is that becomes those resources to allow us the support to be here and let it move through us as is its innate nature.
Mm. I really love the picture of the compass, like our emotions are the compass. And so a guide to something which is true for us in the moment. And what I feel quite often is the case, what prevents people from feeling their feelings is this judgment and this dualistic mindset about good or bad.
Yeah.
Right? So when we take that away, like the good and bad, and as we learn in the training, an emotion just lasts actually 30 to 90 seconds.
Yeah.
That's so fascinating. So literally like a wave,
yeah,
washing through us.
Yeah.
So when, as you said, like we are so encoded with concept of our family, what's allowed, what was invited. So how can we check in with ourselves? How is our relation to emotions really? Like, how can we know, like, when we are, like we say, propping, when we are like contracting and not letting the wave wash through it? How do we know that?
Yeah. So I would say, like, if you were just to contract your whole body and that sensation of nothing, like your breath might not be moving, literally your fluids are not moving as well. It's actually on a physiological level just like that. It is a contraction, not of the emotion, but a contraction of holding on and not allowing it to move. I think we often get confused or possibly misread the body cue of going, oh, I'm tensing up around the emotion because that's the response the emotion, but rather that's our attitude towards the emotion. If you were to, you know, relax that holding of your body and say, oh, where could sadness just move through? Where could anger just move through? Where could joy just move through? They're all meant to move through. And so where can, in our body, can they already move through? Where are those sort of liquid highways that allow those feelings to just easily already move through? And then we might start to recognize those points of tension as well, where it feels blocked. And that, for some time, that might be our whole body, but that's probably not true. It might be even the smallest little stream where those feelings can get through. We want to find those, because those are going to be the resources we want to really cultivate to start to build more capacity and tolerance for feelings and being with them.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think this practice of being with our feelings, I cannot underline it enough. I think is for our society. I feel there's a very distorted opinion about emotions, like, oh, you know, especially women are, she's the drama queen, you know, and she's way too emotional. You know, I heard, like, recently, it was shocking. I heard that women were competing about how they didn't scream while giving birth.
Oh my gosh.
I was shocked. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I was so tough, you know, I didn't cry. I didn't scream. Like, I just, you know, hold it. Like, this is like, how can you even do that?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, if you imagine a baby and they are crying because they're hungry and you shush that baby, what are we saying? It's like you shouldn't express in the only way that you can communicate that you have needs, that you have feelings. And I would imagine that most of us can go, well, of course not. I would never do that to a baby. So how can we use that same compassion towards a little one and direct it towards ourselves? Because all of us is craving that same validation, that same recognition, that same compassion to be here with what's here. And yeah, you'll find perhaps a competition about who can be the most quiet during birth, but I would say, gosh, is that what feels truly from the most internal impulse what wants to happen? Or is it, again, like tensing your body on top of something that's trying to move through? I don't think there's an award for who can be the most quiet or who can be the most suppressive.
It's crazy.
Of an experience. In fact, I don't know what the opposite of an award might be, but when we look at the physiology of what happens when you suppress an impulse emotion, the consequences are significant. We increase an inflammatory state of being, and those inflammations, I mean, it has its significant effect. We've proven that over and over again in social science research. It has a significant suppression of your immune system. It has a significant impression on the movement, actually, of your organs, of that holding. And that information of your organs, for example, is what's needed in order to maintain and regulate homeostasis. So the pressure of your immune system means that you're less responsive to engaging with what needs to be essentially moved through in your body in order to maintain health. So it's not just a metaphor. It is actually a physiological consequence for when we don't allow ourselves to be here with what's here. And I don't mean to scare anyone, because again, I want to really recognize that there are certain times in our life and instances where it wasn't safe to feel what we were feeling. where it wasn't allowed. And that's not our fault. That is a process of survival. It's that when that process of survival becomes our operation system, where we no longer have choice to be here with what's here, to listen, to allow that to navigate us, that it becomes a consequence, and we're no longer in that potential of freedom, where we are the ones empowered to be navigating through life.
So can we talk a little bit more about the consequences? I read on your website the World Health Organization names the most pressing health concerns for 2020 anxiety and depression caused by isolation. So when we don't feel our feelings, dis-ease might appear in a form of depression or anxiety. So can you talk a little bit more about that topic? Because I feel it's a very, very big one. So many people feel lonely.
Yeah, loneliness really can show up. We can look at it under sort of four main categories. And loneliness is a way in which I feel departed from myself, departed or separated from another person or persons, departed or separated from my culture, my society, my a little larger group, as well as the way in which I feel departed or separated from the environment. You know, a beautiful saying is the forgetting that nature is part of nature. I can't really imagine looking at a tree outside my window now and going, oh, the tree forgets that it's connected to the soil in which it's planted. And yet somehow as human beings, there's a forgetting of that same interconnection, that same effect that we are actually part of this nature. Mm-hmm. We are an extension of the trees. And I don't mean that in like a woo-woo way. I mean, literally, we are made of the same foundational material. It's not like all of a sudden the world was created and there was nature and then just beside the nature, there was human beings. We are nature. And that forgetting of nature, that separateness that might exist, you know, through the through forgetting shows up as actually a consequence of often, like, I can just easily throw garbage. I can pollute. I can annihilate this nature that is actually part of me, which is also nature. And in terms of the other three, when I feel disconnected from myself, so going back to that first one, I don't know where I am. So literally on a proprioceptive level, I cannot identify where I am in space. On an interoceptive level, I cannot feel where I am. And so it becomes on these very subtle levels that have a significant magnitude, separation. I don't know where I am. I don't know who I am. And it's in a way discombobulating, disorienting. And that suppression I was talking about, that immunosuppression, one of the manifestations of that not knowing of that suppression is anxiety, depression. Things in depression are not moving. There's a very significant difference between sadness and depression. Sadness is an emotion. Depression is the lack of motion. And that's not to discount the many people who have depression. And yes, we can absolutely weave in a genetic component to it, a biochemical component. All of those are real. And even within the chemistry, there's a way in which there's a disconnection or an opportunity for more connection. In terms of interculturally, interculturally, that separation, when we look at how could we possibly, I mean, it still baffles me, how could we possibly harm another person? How could we possibly go to war? And the reason for that is actually a simple answer, which is, I feel otherness. If I can project an otherness onto someone else, or a group of people rather, then that separation has a significant effect again, where I can actually perform violence. And if violence doesn't have to be punching someone in the face or going to war, it can be a microaggression. It can be just a way in which I find ways to sort of validate that sense of otherness, which only creates more otherness and separateness. And that same physiological effect that happens intrapersonally when I feel separated from myself is also happening when I feel separate from a culture, when I feel separate from a group. We know that there is a significant effect when we feel connected to a group. We see the same physiological well-being emerge in social science research with connections to a group. Those who feel connected to a group live longer. Their survival is longer because of that relation to a group. Now, imagine if that sense of that survival of intergroup connectivity expanded even bigger to every group, in which that intergroup became everyone. I can only imagine the significant, I keep using the word significant here, the effects, the ramifications of having that sense of in-group expand to all of the people in the world. And the second one that I was speaking about was interpersonally, so our relationships with each other. And the development of our relationship, the development of intimacy, happens simultaneously as our development of our sense of self. So the way in which we can feel connected or not with another has benefits or consequences to how we are able to feel connected to ourselves. And we might say that the way in which our attachments, our organizations of relation show up with another person is a mirror of how they're showing up in ourselves, and vice versa. So the way in which we might begin to heal or really find connection with other people will support that sense of can support that connection of ourselves. And relationships are fundamental. We are evolutionarily driven to be in relationships. When you feel heartache, that is a communication from within your physiology to say, oh, that I am communicating, I don't know the I is, this part of you is communicating your need of connection for survival. And so that sense of heartbreak, I mean, it's a lot of things, but one of it is saying, hey, this might jeopardize our survival. Now, that being said, there are certain relationships that jeopardize our survival too. So, you know, it's always a play between what feels right and sort of some evolutionary mechanism, biological mechanism. So, yeah, you know, there are lots of ways in or ways we can view where those connections are and where those connections are not, which are, you know, manifest in the form of separation, isolation. And that effect, again, creates symptoms that we call depression, anxiety. Like, there's no support systems that we can feel to help us anchor in ourselves and then connect with other people. So we feel lost. I mean, that is an element of anxiety, is the intolerance for being with the unknown. And when we recognize that most of the world, our life, is swimming in the unknown, that's what it means to be alive, and we don't have the tolerance or the support systems or the structures in our life to lean against in that, we have a biological response that we call anxiety. And it becomes on a feedback loop where it feels like it is in the driver's seat of our life, where we're no longer in control. So, yeah. And also, you know, part of emotion is the movement, the expression of it through us. And so if we don't have the support structures or the container for that expression, with literally meaning the container of our body that we're in touch with, or the support structure system of a family or friends or the environment, then that movement ceases to exist and we get depression.
Mm.
Yeah.
There was a lot in there you said again. So here in this training, we were moving a lot, and you're a psychologist based in somatics and body-mind centering. So for the people listening on a very practical level, how can we practice to listen to the somatic impulses and senses that really occur on a physiological level when something is contracting? And how can we have the courage and really start listening more? What would you say?
Yeah, so you're kind of inviting, how do we attune to this very subtle primal communication of our being, which is sensation and movement. You know, developmentally, those are our two first sensory connections. Touch, is sensation, is movement. And so how do we essentially work our way back to experiencing that fundamental communication that's happening within us? And one is slowing down. I know that sounds either simple or really freaking hard. But slowing down, it takes longer to be in contact with the subtlety of sensation than it does to have a thought. About 8 times slower. So can you slow down 8 times the speed of a thought to come into contact with what's happening in your body? And I really say, you know, at the beginning level, it's called active imagination, meaning like, yeah, let it be our imagination that there might be sensation or feeling or texture or qualities to something in somewhere in your body. If you were just to let your imagination sort of have a field day, what might emerge? So giving yourself that permission to just really slow down and just let whatever is coming up or potentially be there, even if you think it might be in your imagination, to be contacted.
Mm. Yeah, and I think, like for me at least, it's also this capacity to really allow every feeling with no judgment. I really see that in so many people, that they constantly judge whatever they feel. And secondly, being afraid of that, this is their identity.
Yeah.
Like when they are sad, or when they allow to be vulnerable and say like, well, I'm very insecure right now.
Mm-hmm.
So to really allow ourselves to be everything and let it wash through.
Yeah.
So how can we be less judgmental about ourselves?
Yeah, I mean, you may have seen me do this in the embodied flow trainings, but when someone's really in contact with a feeling and they're sharing it, I I'm just going to say, wow, thank you so much for letting both of us be in contact with that. That acknowledgement is so powerful. The insurance that you're safe, we're safe together, that what's happening here, that what you're in contact with is okay. And to recognize you're okay being in contact with it.
And it's not killing you.
Yeah. Look at that. You just had this wave of sadness and survived.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
I know. But this is, I find it so funny that we're so afraid of like I remember when I had a heartbreak sitting alone in Bali in my room and practicing being with a feeling and it's so hard.
Yeah.
And you're so afraid.
Yeah.
That, yeah, might kill you. Right.
Yeah.
And we invent all of these distraction mechanisms. So what would you say, like, I mean, I know there are tons, but like of distraction mechanisms. So for me, it's really being busy and, you know, also intellectualizing, like, why is something like that? And why is the other person and this and that, and bringing things into concept and also being like, you know, working lots. So can you name like a few, what do you notice from your experience, like what people do in order to not feel?
Yeah. Well, I can, thank you for sharing your favorite ones.
I love them.
Yeah.
Netflix is also good.
Netflix, oh yeah. Drinking. Mm. That's not my favorite one, but I would say my favorite one is eating faster than I can taste.
Mm.
And that's always a good indicator. I'm like, whoa, what? I'm not even tasting the food. What's going on? I'm just kind of piling things in, like stuffing things in. And I wonder if there's something that might want to come out.
Do you have this shelf? We have this shelf at home where, you know, where all the sweets are. Sometimes I hope my boyfriend's listening. I see my boyfriend just going and stuffing things in, you know, just like compulsively.
Yeah.
Like everything that becomes a reflex, right?
Yeah. I once heard, I think this might even be his book, but Deepak Chopra say, like, what are you really hungry for?
Mm.
And I kind of turn that around and say, okay, well, what really wants to be felt?
Mm.
That might be having some desire to be, and that some part of me is desiring perhaps not to feel it, or that at some point it was intolerable. And how can I just go, oh, like a friend or a child, or be like, wow, that at some point was really hard. I feel that with you. And what would be the amount that is okay right now, even if it's, you know, the smallest grain of sand of that feeling? And to be with that and let that be enough for now. And maybe tomorrow it's 2 grains of sand, and tomorrow, the day after, is 3 grains of sand of that feeling. And, you know, what I can say from being on this journey myself is that once you feel the clarity that you can have these emotions, the mass variety of feelings and textures and qualities of the emotions, that it just really gets easier to swim with. It's like, if I were to go out to the sea right now across the street from us, I've swam in it enough that I feel really comfortable. I can just swim. I don't feel like I have to find and locate myself or where other people are. I just really know the terrain and trust it. And so emotions and being with emotions ends up being just like that.
Yeah, and it's part of our being human.
Yeah, it's a biological fundamental nature.
Yeah, right. And I feel also it's the key to so much knowledge about ourselves and becoming really authentic.
Yeah. I mean, if we really kind of recognize that emotions are a way in which there's an intercommunication that's happening. And that communication shows up in our primal form of communication or our primal language, which is sensation. And so just like I'm not going to shush that baby, I'm going to go, whoa, this sensation is communication. It's informing me about what's happening within me, what's happening within the dynamics of my values, my morals, my boundaries. It is that inner communication of experience. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I have one last question.
Okay.
A hypothetical question. So if today would be your last day on this earth, in this body, what would you tell humanity, like three things you have learned or you would love to let them know from your life's journey so far?
I would say that I love you. And I don't mean that in a Hallmark kind of way. I mean that in a way that I have spent my life reconnecting from a place of very disconnected. And the feeling that emerges from that process of connecting is love. It is this epic love that just says, wow, I recognize you might not be able to be with me, but I'm going to keep working to be with you. And I would also say, have fun. Life is playful. Its nature is unpredictable. It is uncertain. That is, that we know is certain. And when you can arrive fully in yourself, you get to swim in that unknown, in the playfulness that just is. And, you know, joke, have fun. And it doesn't have to be the journey towards even having emotions and feeling and feeling connected and feeling connected to other people can really be through play and curiosity. That it doesn't have to be through absolute, you know, meditation and asana and certain tools that are there to help us with that finding that union. They can be playful within it. And the third thing I would say is, I am here with you. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Thanks for asking.
I love you too.
I love you too. Yeah.
Scott, it was such a pleasure talking to you this morning. And I would love that more people got the chance to be here with you and to practice being with what's here. So let us know a little bit, where can people meet you, practice with you?
Yeah. A good access point is my website. So it's Dr. Scott Lyons, Dr. Scott Lyons, Scott Lyons, .com. And there's some practices on my site. That are free, and I'll be adding more. And there's my events. So I have the Embodied Flow trainings that you just finished. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a big deal. And welcome fully to the family.
Yes.
Not that you haven't fully been welcomed before, but...
But now even more.
But now even more. So some of my offerings, as well as my somatic stress release training, which weaves in a lot of my research on stress, how to be here with what's happening in relationship to stress, and really utilizing it as a form of empowerment. And then we also have that incredible event with my mentors and teachers in Berkeley, California, October 2019, which is called the Embodied Consciousness Immersion. And a lot of what we shared about connection and disconnection today will be talked about in that immersion with, you know, Sally Kempton, Bonnie Bay Michikone, Michael Beckwith, Judith Blackstone, Tara Judell. It's kind of an all-star cast of exploring the beautiful questions you asked today about connection. Yeah.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, I'm excited for it.
So you guys, if you have a chance, really, really go. I can so much not say it enough, just go. It gives you so many life tools. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I know you guys heard that a lot, but it's really a life training what you're offering.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's interesting. I think I'm getting more and more comfortable with really just recognizing that, I mean, that a yoga training might be assumed that it's an asana training, mm-hmm. but I really truly believe a yoga training is a life training. Mm-hmm. You know, the first and fundamental healing modalities is yoga. I mean, what we know as common day psychology all stems from thousands of years old practices. It's incredible. Yes. I love that.
Thank you for recognizing that as a clinical psychologist too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My gosh. Yogis are the original psychologists and doctors and healers.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you so, so much, Scott. It was an honor. And yeah, so we will have all the information and where people can get in touch with you as show notes under this podcast. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you for being you.
Yeah, guys, thank you so much for listening. Wow, that was a very strong episode. And I hope it gives you some practices, some insights, courage to really feel your feelings and to be more loving and compassionate with yourself. So, looking forward to see you next week. Have a great day. Bye bye. Vielen Dank fürs Einschalten und Zuhören. Wenn dir diese Folge gefallen hat, freue ich mich, wenn du auch nächste Woche wieder mit dabei bist. Finde alle Infos zum Podcast unter www.vandabhadwa.com, Spotify, Apple Podcast oder deiner Lieblings-Podcast-Plattform. Ich freue mich, wenn du mir folgst, den Podcast mit deinen Freunden teilst und eine positive Bewertung dalässt. Denn nur mit deiner Unterstützung kann der Podcast wachsen und so viele Menschen wie möglich inspirieren. Danke, dass du dabei warst. Ich wünsche dir eine wundervolle Zeit und wir hören uns nächste Woche. Namaste.